I delve back into the book on hearthstones. Chapter 54. I venture to the kitchen to say hello to Henry and the line cooks. It's the central hub of the palace. The maidservants are always coming and going, running errands for the nobles, always accompanied by gossip and rumors. Affairs, alcohol intake, disputes. Any and all information regarding court transgressions is filtered through the kitchen. The palace is never without speculation regarding the king's affairs, from the mundane to the grandiose. There's concern over stirrings just across Roycen border, fear of another war coming. The uncertainty about the Strow alliance after Acre's stunt at the celebratory dinner has made its way to the townsfolk, with everyone having different opinions on the matter. Some think reuniting the old alliance with Maylee is the right choice, others quite the opposite. Particularly after my mother's repeated refusals to open her borders over the last decade. The common thread running through all, though, is their love for the prince. They're under the impression that Acre will protect them at all costs. Tales of his battles are shared and repeated with reverence, almost worshipful. I feel most comfortable here amid the bustle of the kitchens. Also, Henry is always eager to try out his new or favorite recipes on me, and I am plenty happy to oblige. I've been listening to the staff for hours and am eating a cranberry muffin when Beau finds me.
"You're nearly impossible to track down," she says.
"Me?" I say, pushing the remaining muffins toward her. "I haven't seen you in days."
"Not all of us live a life of leisure, Joe."
I inspect the dark circles under her eyes, the dullness in her hair. "Your father's been keeping you busy?"
"You could say that."
She takes two of the muffins and thanks Henry.
"Come, my mother has something she wants to show you."
I'm scrambling to keep up with her as she moves toward the doorway. The temperature in the hall drops, making me shiver after being in the overheated kitchen all afternoon. Beau's dressed in her uniform, leather armor and metal rope included. The weapon clinks off her shoulder and hip as she stalks through the halls. Greta's eyes light up when we walk into the library.
"I was starting to think you got lost."
She waves us to follow her into the alcove underneath the stairs. A desk is shoved into the corner with a lantern hanging above for light. Standing on her tiptoes, Greta slides a massive text from the top shelf, and Beau and I stretch out our arms to help lower the weighty book onto the table.
"I've been looking for these records ever since your return. And I finally found them."
She huffs out a breath, blowing her bangs from her face, and settles into the chair. Four times the size of a regular text, each page creates a draft of wind as she turns it. Dust floats in the air, and Beau coughs, waving it away from her face.
"Here,"
Greta declares, wiping the page clean before pointing.
"Your mother."
I angle the lantern overhead to get a better view. The illustrated depiction of my mother is uncanny. In her youth, she could have been my twin. If it didn't have her name in looping script below the picture, or her slightly darker hair, I'd swear it was me. Evelyn. There's additional text under her name, and I wipe the space clean to read it. Elemental. Air.
"What is this?"
I ask.
"These are the earliest recordings of heirs and their gifts, or at least that we know of."
My eyes flick to Greta's. "Is my father in here?" I see the dismay in her eyes before she answers.
"No, my darling, he wasn't an heir."
Shock rocks me back on my feet.
"What? I thought you knew,"
she says.
"How would I have known?"
"Acre never told you,"
Beau asks. I shake my head.
"I suppose it's of no consequence, but I never even thought to ask." "Their love story is quite romantic,"
Greta says.
"The princess who fell in love with her appointed guard. It was the height of scandal for a princess to marry a commoner. Never did one ascend the throne before or since his crowning."
"Well," Beau drawls,
"that's debatable." "All thrones are held by usurpers,"
Greta agrees.
"But he was the first and only to do it by love."
Beau rolls her eyes.
"Anyway," Greta says, I wanted to show you a little of your mother's history.
Thank you, Greta. Would you mind if I nosed around in these logs for a while?
Not at all. She stands so I can reclaim her seat. If you find anything interesting, please share.
Bo pulls a spare chair close. The book appears to be categorized by lineage. I flip to the front page and wipe it clean with my palm. King Edmund is first. He looks a lot like Aker, but I'm grateful for the subtle differences in their features. Elemental. Fire. I move to close the book, but the image next to the king's portrait catches my eye. Leaning closer, I gently clean it with my thumb, making sure I'm not imagining things as I gaze at the slightly downturned eyes and widow's peak. Aker's mother has a smile full of mischief. Actually, it's kind of condescending, coming across even through the illustrated depiction. It kind of reminds me of... No. It's not possible.
What is it?
Bo says, leaning in to peer over my shoulder. I'm not sure. Do you know where there's a better image of the late queen? She stands and leads me to Greta's desk. She's nowhere to be found as we open the floor and descend into the abyss. Igniting the lamp, Bo lifts it from its place on the wall, carrying it down the stacks of books to the furthest wall. There, partially hidden by a tapestry, is a portrait of the royal family, the king on his throne with his son at his side. Aker must have been no more than 5. Behind him stands a woman with curly hair and a vibrant smile, her hand resting on her husband's shoulder. A young grenadine stares back at me. The crabby old woman that lived next to me in Alaha. I'm sure of it.
Joe,
Bo demands,
tell me what it is you see.
I need to tell Aker. I reach through the bond and find myself in Aker's room. The sound of the king's voice sends ice through my veins.
Keep Jovinia as a consort or send her back to Melee.
Turning in place, I find them in the sitting room, Aker's back to me as he stares up at his father's pacing figure.
In what world are either of those options? She's my match,
he says, voice rising an octave.
Never in history has a king been denied his match. But you're not king,
his father says, voice cold.
You're nothing but a prince. Under my reign, and when I give an order, I expect obedience. Even if you're wrong,
Aker says. I can't see his face, but I can imagine the harsh glare he has leveled at his father, similar to the one the king stares right back with as he lords over his son. It's a battle of power, of wills.
Give me an argument to justify her hand instead of the Strahl's daughter,
the king says.
Give me anything other than the simple fact that you want her. I love her,
Aker says.
Is it not enough? No.
His father shakes his head.
Not when you are responsible for the well-being of your people. We need the Strahl Alliance more than you need her hand in marriage.
Aker stands, and I hurry to hide behind the wall of the bedroom, listening through the doorway.
We can negotiate a new alliance with Evelyn. She'll never agree to it, son. She despises the entire conclave. You don't know for sure,
Aker argues.
Jovi is proof that Ren took her as a child. She can help sway Evelyn to our side. The queen will want revenge. Jovi!
The king snorts and enunciates the term of endearment like it's a joke.
The girl who trained in the Alaha Guard, who was in love with Ren's son, according to all reports. And you expect her to lend her mother's army and resources to eradicate them? She doesn't sympathize with their scheming,
Aker says. The king throws his hands up.
You're acting like a spoiled child.
I jolt from the sound of something slamming into stone, a scattering of objects hitting the floor.
You told me you would find a solution,
Aker says, emotion making his voice tremble with thin restraint.
I put up the front. I played nice with Arena to settle the Strahl's nerves while you worked out a new plan. For what? For you to tell me there is no other way? Fuck that! The Alaha are gearing up for war, and the incident at the market was only the beginning. Now, we have Roysen joining the fight thanks to your match's little stunt at the border. We'll be fighting on multiple fronts, and we have any chance against Ren? Against Roysen? We need more bodies on the playing field, and Strau has them. Meili's army is bigger,
Iker argues.
If we can convince Evelyn...
Enough!
The king's command does, indeed, rattle the wall at my back.
I spoke with Joss and Ulrich. They are fine with you keeping Jovi as a consort as long as you take their daughter's hand in marriage and give her a child. They ask for at least one successor. It's a generous offer, knowing you'll most likely want to sire children with your match. And if I refuse?
Iker asks, voice darkening. There's a long beat of silence where I begin to wonder if I've been discovered. Then the king says,
When did you do this?
I don't have a visual to explain the punctuated silence. My heart is in my throat, and I strain to hear the tiniest of movements in case they decide to come my way. The king's voice is eerily calm. Too calm.
If I ever find out you've given another blood oath, I'll chain you up in the dungeons. Do you understand?
I dare a peek around the wall to get a look at what is happening and see the king's hand curled around the back of his son's neck, his grip obviously tight.
As for your original threat, if you defy me again, I have more ways than you could possibly comprehend to ensure you never lay eyes on your match again.
The sound of the door unlocking reverberates in the stillness left after his chilling statement.
If I were you, the king says, I'd find a way to convince Jovinia to agree to the arrangement. Speaking from experience, it never ends well when you try to hide the truth from another woman. As for future conversations between us, you'll be collared.
I flinch when the door slams shut. Then I'm back in the hidden library with Beau's eyes on me. My vision blurs as I do my best to keep my panicked heart from beating out of my chest. I concentrate on breathing. Deep, long pulls of air as I brace my hands on the edge of a bookshelf, the king glaring down at me from the old family portrait. In. Out. In. Out. Just because Iker ran out of a fight against his father doesn't mean he's in agreement. I need to give him the chance to fix it, to confide in me about what his father has been pushing him toward, that he doesn't want this. I look up at Beau. Her eyes are full of remorse, as if she saw the same conversation I was privy to. Then I realize it's my aura. She knows whatever I saw is wreaking havoc on my heart, and nothing she can say will stop it from fracturing. Chapter 55. I don't recognize myself. Hair in waves over one shoulder, eyes smoked with charcoal, lips stained red. The green dress complements my hair and eyes, its bodice draping asymmetrically over one shoulder, skirt falling like a waterfall to my ankles. My shoes peek out from under the hem, silver, like my earrings, adding additional height to my frame.
Perfection!
Beau says, smiling behind me. Stasia holds a silver chain around my waist. What do you think? It's Beau's dress, the silver belt custom made to match her metal rope. I shake my head. I think it's fine without it. The maidservant makes a small noise of agreement, having come a long way since the time she first escorted me to my room.
I think so too.
She speaks a half step above a whisper now. I turn to Beau, taking in her normal garb as she swings her legs where they're draped over the side of the chair. Illegitimate children are not permitted to attend royal dinners. Though Beau is third under her father's command, even she is not permitted to attend royal dinners as an illegitimate child. I wish I could have her by my side. Tonight may perhaps be the most important night of my life, of all of our lives. Sitting up, she props her chin on a fist, elbow braced on the arm of the chair.
Remember what I told you. You belong here as much as anyone else. Act like it.
Easier said than done. While the kitchen and waitstaff have grown accustomed to me, the parishioners have not. They don't shy away from me, and while there are no actively open naysayers, for fear of being hung on the wall,
There are also no polite smiles of support. To the courtiers, I'm nothing more than a curious mouse in the halls. This dinner is a farce. It's supposed to be a celebration of my return, of the completion of Aker's quest to save me from the Alaha and Ren's hands, but there's not a single person besides Aker, Bo, and Hallis who is even mildly excited to see me. Every now and then, a soldier will help me during morning training, offering corrections when needed, or an even more rare compliment. But their interactions with me are kept to a bare minimum under the watchful eye of the court monitoring from the veranda, especially when the king has come to observe. His eyes always feel like the relentless heat of 1,000 suns on our backs. There's a knock at the door, and the maidservant opens it, announcing Hallis's presence. I tell her to let him in. Dressed in the blackest finery, he looks dashing, hair slicked perfectly into place, black lapels of his formal attire accentuating his broad shoulders underneath. As he nods to us, I see a velvet box in his hand. I sense more than see Bo's intake of breath, and I'm pretty sure he grins in response.
"Stand and let me see,"
he says, motioning for me to rise with the box in his hand. Standing from my seat at the mirror, I tug on the material of my skirt so it falls without creasing. I know it's only Hallis, but the scan of his eyes over me makes me self-conscious, and my blush gives me away. Hallis is a gentleman and doesn't poke fun, which is a surprise.
"You look beautiful, Jovi."
"Thanks," I say, looking at myself in the full-length mirror once more. It feels like a lifetime since I envied the women at the market. Now, here I am, dressed in even more exquisite finery, my heart tender around the edges.
"Aker was called into council with his father, so he sent me to deliver this."
He opens the box and holds up a string of silver and pearls.
"May I?"
I hold my hair aside so he can drape the jewelry around my neck, pinning it to my collarbone with my spare hand.
"Cadence's threaded pearls," Bo says, standing to help Hallis with the clasp.
The awe in her voice catches me by surprise.
"As in," I ask. "Aker's mother,"
Hallis answers. I run my fingers over the pearls, heart squeezing in my chest. It somehow gives me the boost of morale I need to walk into a room full of unwelcoming stares and judgment. Hallis offers his arm, and I slide my hand into the crook of his elbow.
"Ready?"
he asks. I take a deep breath. "As I'll ever be." Bo smiles.
"You're yellow,"
she says, running a hand over my exposed shoulder in a comforting gesture as she walks ahead of us to the door.
"Try to enjoy yourself."
Then her gaze slides to Hallis.
"And you too, looking as gray as ever."
Hallis actually smiles at her.
"Good night, Bo."
We watch her back as she retreats down the hall, disappearing around the corner. "Does she know?" I ask him.
"Know what?"
he says, sparing me a glance as we turn in the opposite direction. "That you're in love with her?" He doesn't miss a step or so much as blink at my bold statement.
"Bo thinks everyone is in love with her, so probably."
We walk in easy silence, passing a couple of maidservants who dip their heads in respectful nods, gestures we return in kind. We run into Henry on his way to the kitchen, dressed in his finest apron, and he stops us to rave about how handsome we look. He's excited for me to taste his balsam-glazed sprouts. Bidding him farewell, we stop in one of the chambers that branch off from the dining hall. Hallis gives me a steadying look. I nod, but stop short at the sound of footsteps coming up behind us. Turning, we see Aker emerge from the shadows, legs eating the distance between us with quick strides. Dressed in green, a few shades darker than my own, he takes in my dress, my face, the silver string of pearls at my collarbone.
"Jovi."
His hand snakes around my waist, pulling me to him for a kiss.
"You are."
He shakes his head, eyes fluttering over my features, my neck.
"Indescribable. What are you doing here?"
Hallis says, unthreading his arm from my hand.
"Your father said..."
Aker cuts him off.
"I know what he said."
He dips his head to the pulse of my neck, inhaling before placing a kiss to the tender spot.
And I've decided I don't care,
he says, eyes clear when he looks at me.
Shall we?
He presents his arm, and a huge part of me relaxes in his presence, smiling as I settle my hand in the crease of his elbow.
Acre,
Hallis says in warning. Acre's head whips around.
I said I don't care,
he snaps. Hallis is as shocked as I am, maybe even more so, eyes wide as he stares at his closest friend. Clenching his teeth, Acre releases a breath through his nose.
Jovi is my match, and nothing is going to stand in the way of that,
he says, straightening the cuffs of his finery.
Not you, not some bullshit alliance, and definitely not my father.
Sensing he's on the losing end of this argument, Hallis releases a breath, eyes sliding toward the entrance to the dining hall.
I'll go first. At least I'll get a good view of the show.
He dips his head in farewell, eyes lingering on Acre before sliding to me.
Princess,
he says, then walks around the bend in the hall. I'm getting the sense your father isn't willing to break the alliance with Strau. Acre places his spare hand over the one I have tucked in his arm.
Once we walk in there, he won't have a choice.
With me at his side, he means. In my heels, I'm closer to his height. A more honorable woman would attempt to change your mind, I say, meeting his gaze. His grin is nothing less than lascivious.
Honor is for the pious,
he says, leaning in to kiss me. It's all heat and promise, and I'm sad that it's so short-lived. Some of the stain of my lips transfers to his mouth, so I reach to wipe it with the pad of my thumb, but he pulls away.
Leave it.
With a dangerous look in his eyes, he ushers me to the end of the hall.
Walk to the dais. I'll be right behind you.
You're not going to walk with me? I say, stopping in my tracks.
I'll be right behind you.
He assures me, hand on the small of my back.
You'll feel me the entire time.
I don't like it, but he places another soft kiss on my lips, as if it never occurred to him to ever resist placing his mouth on mine. I'm going to have to trust him. I turn and face the draped opening to the hall, lit brightly beyond the veil, and step through. Any hope I had of going unnoticed is quickly dashed when heads immediately swivel in my direction. Acre keeps his promise, fingertips pressed against the dip of my spine as we walk down the center aisle of tables, our steps echoing off the stone floor and up to the golden ceiling. Even the helmeted heads of the soldiers lining the room turn and watch. I maintain my focus on the dais, on the king as he laughs with a nobleman before taking notice of the dimming noise of the party. His eyes lock on me as he turns, then his son, face reddening in anger at the sight of this clear insubordination. Slowing to a stop at the base of the platform, I dip my head in the way the Kenta do in greeting, bowing as much as I can in my skirt and heels to show my servitude. Your Highness, I greet him. Acre doesn't do anything of the sort. Stepping before me, he looks his father in the eye, an unspoken challenge as he offers me a guiding hand up the stairs. Acre leads me around the table to the seats on the other side, facing the congregation. We pass the filled chairs where a man and woman with blonde hair and light eyes sit. Acre pulls out the nearest to the middle, and I sit with as much grace as I can muster. Then, in his most daring move yet, Acre places his hands on the bare skin of my shoulders, leaning down to kiss my cheek in front of the entire assembly. I'm impressed with my ability to keep my blush at bay. Acre takes a goblet from the table and lifts it toward the congregation.
To the lost princess of Meili,
he announces.
And to her safe return.
Murmurs of stunned reverence travel across the room as the people lift their drinks, mostly out of respect for their prince. Acre drinks from his cup, eyes sharp as he takes in his acolytes, daring someone to appear less than pleased. His gaze is heavy, assessing, dangerous. I was wrong to be scared of Acre when he sat on the throne that first day of our arrival, not when I'm on his side of the equation. I look up at him and lift my goblet. In adoration and appreciation, I speak the words without fanfare. They're nothing more than an observation. I'll hail the Prince of Kenta. A louder, more pronounced round of agreement rings out. All hail the Prince of Kenta. The prince who killed on the battlefield for his people, who risked life and limb to bring hope back to his land by returning a symbol of peace from its past. All hail the Prince of Kenta. I look at the king, sitting red-faced and indignant, and a smirk tugs at the corner of my lips. It seems the people have spoken. The riotous cheers fizzle as a woman steps through the veiled opening, drawing the attention of the entire room. Irina steps forward, blonde hair piled high on her head, red dress dripping from her shoulders. Strau's color, I realize, matching the garments her parents wear, sitting unmoving to my right. She begins her glide down the center of the room, heels clacking against the marble floor, neck empty of jewels. Her beauty is almost ethereal, and although I'm the one sitting to Aker's right, I can't help but feel inadequate to be his match. Her assured steps falter as she gets closer to the stage, eyes quickly surveying the lack of remaining seats, her fuming parents, me, in her seat. Aker drapes a wrist over the back of my chair and winks at me, completely unfazed by the silent humiliation of the girl lost and alone at the foot of the dais. He finishes his wine and slams the goblet down on the table.
"Where's the food?"
he says, looking around in question.
"I thought we were here to eat, so let's eat."
A maidservant appears with a decanter to refill his cup, then another enters, and another, and suddenly the dining hall is flooded with servants delivering dish upon dish of food to the tables, ours filling up fastest. Bracing his elbow against the table, he sips from his refilled goblet.
"I ran into Henry in the hall,"
he says, leaping into conversation. I pretend to pay close attention to Aker's tale, smiling at the identical interaction Hallis and I had with the cook, but I am aware of Irina as she finally takes the hint and walks off, heels clicking in her hasty retreat. Not long after, her parents abandon their spots as well. And Henry wasn't wrong. His sprouts really are incredible. Chapter 56. Alaha, the morning after the storm.
"What do you mean you broke the Kenta soldier out of the brig?"
Kai says, eyes wide. I shush him and pull him further behind the tanner's shop. He was going to die.
"Yeah, Bryn, that was sort of the plan,"
he says, body hunched as he whisper yells at me.
"Then we were going to put his body in a boat and send him back out to sea so it looked like an accident."
"Listen," I say, urging him to calm down with a hand against his chest. "Your father made him give a blood oath to not reveal my true identity when we went in to speak to him. He's totally convinced I'm in the dark about everything. Convinced I've been sheltered from the truth of magic and my bloodline this whole time." I step in close, the still gusty storm winds creating a frenzy within the trees, capable of carrying voices with it. I think, if I can convince him I'm naive, he'll take me back to land with him.
"Bryn, no," he says, eyes unyielding. "You have no idea what he's capable of. He's known as the Soldier of Chaos. He could very well get a wild notion out of nowhere and kill you in your sleep."
"He's the Kenta Prince," I stress. "He can take me to the palace. Maybe if I can get close enough to the king."
"You can what?" he snaps, voice firm. "Kill him? Edmund, the King of Kenta, the most powerful ruler in history."
"I haven't awakened yet. I could be as powerful as you and not know it." He's already shaking his head, pacing away from me with his hands on his hips.
"He's only here to enact revenge for the market. The explosion was supposed to look like an accident, but he must know you had something to do with it."
"I'm telling you, Kai, he's so sure of my innocence. He thinks I've been manipulated by your father all my life. I can use it to our advantage." More head shaking.
"And how is it you plan on getting to Kenta?"
"We'll take one of the fishing vessels." He scoffs.
"No one's ever made it across the open sea in a boat that small. It won't work. You don't know for sure. We know anything over an average-sized swell will shatter the hull. It happens all the time. Kai,
I say, allowing the stubbornness in my tone to hang between us.
I'm not asking your permission.
He turns to look at me, a barrage of emotions filtering behind his eyes. Anger, disbelief, but most of all, hurt.
My parents would make me marry someone else.
I look down before finding the courage to meet his eyes again. I know. My answer settles over him in one fell swoop before he hides it, turning away with an exhale.
You can't deny this is the best chance we have to make progress for the rebellion, I say, softening my voice, placating.
We're going to run out of food withholding the market, and it'll be even sooner since your father stopped the fishing excursions because of that Kenta ship. He wants to argue, but knows I'm right.
If the people think the prince took you,
he says, almost reluctant to finish his thought,
it would send them into a panic. To think one of them can come into the grove and take anyone they like. It might put pressure on my father to consider working with the Roysen, especially with their repeated attempts to recruit us for their cause.
I don't want to voice my doubts, because I need Kai to think this can work. I won't point out that people won't be as concerned about an urchin as he believes they'll be. They've never seen me as one of their own. Dupree would have to be dealt with, I say. Kai's eyes turn from uncertain to thoughtful, the strategic leader of the rebellion peeking through, the desire to return the Alaha people to land taking precedence above all else.
We'd need to put his death in the prince's hands.
He meets my gaze again.
All of this assuming he doesn't suspect you're orchestrating anything.
I think if he were to see you use your power on me, he'd never doubt anything about me. He nods.
It'd have to be convincing,
he says.
Something beyond redemption. Something even the metal slinger of Kenta would believe to be utterly merciless.
I think about his weird fixation on my attachment to Kai. He believes you've influenced me to fall in love with you. His brows come down in a fierce slant, righteous indignation flaming behind his eyes.
That's as insulting as it is disgusting.
I know. But reaffirming his thinking would solidify his suspicions. He continues his pacing, and I wait as Kai sorts through everything I've laid at his feet. It's a huge deviation from our original plans, returning to land by any means necessary, even if it's by joining Royson's forces and starting a war. It'd be dumb not to take it. He knows that.
When it's discovered he's missing, they'll search the grove. I'll make sure to be the one to come to your shield. And I'll use my influence on you then.
Okay, I say, agreeing. He stops and looks at me.
My father might show me favoritism, but I don't know how far it'll go if he finds out I'm leading the rebellion. There's not a lot of room for error. You'll have to let your guard down.
I nod, knowing he means relaxing the shield he's taught me to keep erected when around his father, so as to not be influenced by him. Stepping closer, he angles my face up to his.
I don't want to do this,
he says. I know, I tell him, hating the pain in his eyes. I trust you. He touches his forehead to mine, eyes pinched.
I could be sending you to your death, Bryn.
It's a risk I'm willing to take. He rocks his head from side to side.
If he so much as looks at you wrong, I'll kill him myself.
He kisses me quickly, then lets me go.
Don't tell Messer.
Why? He makes a curious face, then says,
"'Cause he'll lose his shit."
Chapter 57 Acre twirls me, and my skirts flare, whipping around my legs as he hauls me into his body. His eyes are illuminated, cheeks flushed from the wine as he stares down at me. Kissing me. The arm banded around my back keeps me anchored to him as we move across the dance floor. He's warm and smells divine, like the sweetness of fresh rain and pine. I savor it, wishing we had more time. I'm regretting not seeking him out earlier in the day, but I think it would have made this worse, made my betrayal all the more sharp, more bitter, biting.
The music is mesmerizing. The notes from the string quartet float along the floor and up the walls, to the mirrored golden ceiling, cascading from above, encompassing the entire room. It elicits an emotion I can't name, but that might simply be because I'm full of too many of them to count. It's late into the dinner celebration. The children have been sent to bed. Hallis retired not long after, just as Beau said he would. He tolerates these dinners at best. The wine has been flowing endlessly into cups, the drink's potency evident in the cheery and reddened faces of the remaining courtiers. But Acre? He's happy. There's an easy smile on his face I haven't seen very often since we came to court. It hurts to look at, but I can't find it in me to look away either, knowing I may never get to see this side of him again. I may never lay eyes on him again after tonight, if I even make it out alive. The king has spent the night on the dais, watching his congregation with one of the many men who've been at his side throughout the night. Every time I dare a look in his direction, he seems to grow more and more agitated by the cheery atmosphere and laughter of his people. The song ends with a flourish, and cheers erupt from the dancers. Signaling their need for a break, the band disbands with bows and promises to return. Maidservants flood in with decanters of more wine, refilling every glass available. Acre shares a laugh with one of the other men on the dance floor, a self-deprecating comment about his drunken footwork, then leads me by the hand to the dais. The king, like the petulant child he had accused Acre of being, sits sullen at the table. I watch as he holds his goblet out while the maidservant fills it. He never so much as looks at her, just gulps down his replenished wine. Acre pays him no mind as he falls into his chair, dragging me into his lap.
"I love you,"
he says, placing a kiss on my exposed shoulder. It's chaste, but somehow heated with promise. It's difficult to not be affected by his splendor. "You're drunk." The maidservant who was making her way down the table stops before us, filling Acre's cup as well. He picks up his drink.
"Am I not allowed to celebrate with my future wife?"
I take the drink from his hand before it reaches his mouth. "Okay, I think you've had enough," I say, smiling.
"Jovi,"
he says, suddenly appearing sober, eyes clearing of their haze.
"I'm not drunk."
I'm stunned into silence, heart pounding in my chest as I search his earnest gaze. "Acre," I say, mentally searching for how to respond, how to keep him talking, shaking my head with an unsteady smile. "You haven't even asked me." He runs his thumb along the crook of my elbow, sending goosebumps across my skin.
"I'm asking, will you marry me?"
I couldn't think of a worse question at a worse time. There's no containing the tears that begin to well in my eyes. He thinks they're from overwhelming emotion, overwhelming happiness, as he looks at me with so much adoration and love that I'm convinced I'm going to be sick. I'm not crying with joy. My heart is breaking, just as Beau knew it would. "Acre," I say, voice shaking. "I never thanked you for everything you've done for me. I would still be in my tiny shield in the highest reaches of Alaha if you hadn't come to save me." His eyes remain steady as I fumble through my thoughts. "I love you," I tell him, steadier this time. "And I always will." He tilts his head, eyes tightening at the corners.
"Jovi,"
he says, gaze questioning, tone edged with suspicion.
"What is it you're not telling me?"
As if on cue, one of the nobles stumbles from his chair, words slurring as he fights to get them out.
"Poor son."
He takes two more steps before falling to the ground on one knee, eyes fuzzy as he spits out the word.
"Poison!"
Then he loses the fight, hitting the marble floor face first with a sickening crack. Acre looks at me in alarm, but he's swift to put the pieces together, eyes landing on the cup I wouldn't let him drink from. Standing, I back away until my thighs hit the table. The congregation is alarmed but sluggish as they all try to fight the inevitable end.
Plates hit the ground, the food splattering. Red wine spills across the floors, so stark against the white tile, like a preface to the blood that will follow. Acre sits forward, but it's too late. The mangy collar I retrieve from the folds of my dress snaps around his neck, but it isn't enough to stop him completely. That's why Beau is there, to whip her metal rope around his ankles, anchoring him to the chair. He growls as she snaps a loop around one wrist, then the other. But the damage has been done. He can't move. The spurs of the rope dig into his flesh, blood welling around the indentations. He looks to his father, unconscious and slumped in his chair, then over the expanse of the now quiet room. Everyone is collapsed and motionless. The sound of shuffling feet and metal is loud in the otherwise silent room as the Kenta soldiers finally decide to make a move toward the dais. A bit delayed, if you ask me. Maybe they believed their beloved prince, the Soldier of Chaos, would have handled the situation, or that Beau's arrival was to help, before they realized she effectively wrangled their only hope. I don't move from my spot in front of Acre. More afraid of him than those 12 men. I hold Acre's stare. His eyes are blazing mad, neck and muscles taut as he strains against his bindings, against the stones around his throat. I wait as the footfalls come closer, closer, closer. The soldiers fan out as they encroach on my position, feet pounding as they reach the bottom step to the stage. The second, the third. Then, when they're a single step away from the top, Acre speaks, demands, yield. The men freeze in their tracks. A grin tugs at the corner of my mouth. Whether it's of his own accord or the blood oaths, it makes no difference. He cannot allow anyone to harm me. I'm slow to turn my head, but I look over my shoulder, eyes zeroing in on the one man I recognize underneath the palace's uniform, his familiar broad shoulders and tall frame near the back of the group of men that await the killing order from their prince. Messer, I call. I can see his smile underneath the lip of the helmet a split second before he moves. He slices through the neck of the man in front of him, and the soldier falls to his knees with a howl, hands straining to stop the flow of blood squirting from his jugular. The rest of the soldiers turn to face the threat coming their way from behind, but it's no use. Messer cuts them down one after another. The swing of his blade is a practiced work of art, smooth and precise. Bodies hit the marble with loud clattering of metal. They're all dead within minutes. Messer places his blood-soaked sword on the table and removes his helmet, pushing his sweaty hair out of his face, breathing out with a smile.
B, he says, finery suits you.
I roll my eyes at his teasing and turn my attention back to Acre, nostrils flaring with every breath. He doesn't speak. Doesn't need to. The revulsion and loathing as he stares back at me are plenty loud enough. Swallowing, I push the leftover plates and cutlery out of the way, then sit on the tabletop. Acre. He jerks in his chair, sending rivers of blood sliding down his wrists, but his eyes never falter. They're weapons in their own right. My eyes shoot to Messer and Beau. I need to gather myself before I continue. The pain lancing through my lungs intensifies with every breath. The only way I'm going to get through this is if I trap that feeling within myself. Beau nods at me in encouragement. Ignoring the growing wound inside my chest, I return my gaze to Acre. I have an offer for you. There's a coldness creeping into his features I never wanted to be on the receiving end of, but I continue as if I'm unaffected. Seize your father's crown, and we'll leave your council untouched. He doesn't so much as blink in the face of my proposal.
Why would I care to usurp my own father?
He asks with a chilling calmness. I shrug, like the answer is obvious. To prevent the war looming over your people. A smirk graces his face, replacing the coldness with something even more sinister. Callousness.
Mighty big promise from a lowly girl who lived in squalor in Alaha.
His words are meant to hurt, but I return his smirk with one of my own. You were so dead set on Ren being evil, on Kai manipulating me, that you never considered the real truth. I say, bracing my hands on either side of my legs on the table, leaning forward so he can clearly see the guile in my eyes. That I am the bad guy. His eyes shudder, but he recovers quickly.
Is that what you tell yourself?
He smarts back.
That you're the real leader of the Alaha Rebellion?
I'm here, aren't I? I jerk my dress above my knees, crossing my legs so I can reach the straps of my heel and unbuckle the shoe, letting it fall to the floor. Looking up at him, I'm unhurried as I do the same to the other shoe, knowing I'm giving him an indecent view up my skirts. He clenches his teeth but doesn't look any lower than my neckline. Contrary to what you believe, Aker, your father is the one calling for war. Sliding from the table, I call my dagger, inspecting the black blade in my hand. He wants to finish what he started centuries ago, to gain rule over all of the territories. Eyes shifting to the weapon, he tightens his hands into fists. The blood falls from the arms of the chair in steady drips.
Surely you see it,
Bo says from over his shoulder. Our father's need to control the gifted, his desire to return the land to the Dark Ages when heirs were worshipped like gods. He huffs a humorless breath of laughter.
Like how I just saw my sister and Match betraying me, all while they were right under my nose.
He says, voice dry.
Can't say that I do see.
Bo and I share a look. This is going to be as difficult as we expected. Revealing the truth about his mother may hurt us in the end if he doesn't concede. Here's the deal, Aker, I say, twirling the dagger, mimicking the movements I've witnessed him perform countless times. Your father is withholding access to the market with the intention of forcing Alaha to return to land, wanting them to break the pact. I suspect he's been picking off our fishing boats for years, chipping away at our food supply, and we gave him the perfect excuse to cut us off without scrutiny. Ren denied Royson's request to join their cause out of a preference for a peaceful solution, but he'll soon be out of options. It's either join the fight or let his people starve.
If you sympathize with their plight so much, why don't you let them into Meili territory?
He says.
Oh, we will,
Messer chimes in with a placid smile.
The young and old and whoever doesn't want to fight.
This unsettles Aker, his already strained muscles beginning to tremble with his barely contained rage. He's fighting the bonds along with a collar. It's not a matter of if he'll break free of Bo's hold, but when.
But you can prevent it,
I say, drawing his attention. Take the throne. Agree to coexist with Royson, with my mother, and there need be no war. He narrows his eyes at me, confusion marring his handsome features for a moment before it's gone.
You could have accomplished all of that and more if you'd stayed by my side.
A painful lump forms in my throat, and I swallow to speak past it.
Not while your father holds the throne, and you know it.
Shaking his head, he says,
you should have played the long game. As your whore?
The realization flashes across his face. I nod. You know as well as I do, he'll never agree to our union. He wants me to play the same role as Greta, and I refuse to be a prisoner to the matching bond, to be forced to wear a collar and never allowed to leave these walls. He looks at me with unfiltered disgust.
You'll always assume the worst of me.
You're wrong, I say, shaking my head, hating the emotion peeking through in my tone. I'm offering you the throne because I know your heart. You deserve to wear the crown. Tilting his head, he stares at me for a moment before abject horror fills his face.
Jovi. No.
I don't have the heart to answer him, knowing he'll never be able to forgive me either way. Aker, sensing what's coming, yanks furiously on the bindings. The metal rattles in Bo's grip, and I know he's on the verge of escaping. After all your talk of Ren wanting ultimate power and women sitting at his feet, I say under my breath, desolate. It's a shame you can't see your father for who he really is. Messer speaks from behind me.
You would think his father was the one who held the power of influence, not Ren.
It's meant as an offhand comment, but Bo and I share a wide-eyed look.
We don't have a lot of time,
Messer warns. I brace my hands on either side of Acre. The day I arrived at the palace, I say. When I was kneeling, I couldn't stand. At the time, I chalked it up to nerves, but I think I was wrong. I think your father influenced me to remain on my knees before the congregation.
You're reaching, he says. My father's gift is the same as mine.
Except the oldest record Greta found states it's not, I say, hoping he sees the truth in my eyes. It's fire. He's taken aback, eyes flaring in surprise before he conceals it. A woman's yell peals through the hall. The maidservant takes one look at us on the dais, the prince captured and the king indisposed, and runs back out of the room. Time's up. Pushing away from Acre's chair, I stand. The weight of my dagger feels heavy in my hand as I look at the king. Messer holds out his hand.
Let me do it, B.
I shake my head. Do you decline my offer to seize your father's throne? I ask Acre, already knowing the answer. He doesn't respond. Eyes glacial. Not a hint of the man I fell in love with anywhere. Beautiful and deadly. I mourn him already, and he's right in front of me. I look at Messer. Give the order. He nods and sticks two fingers in his mouth and lets out a piercing whistle, a signal to the waiting melee soldiers. The three men emerge from the shadows with one goal in mind. Find the 15 remaining nobles and eradicate them. I leave Acre, focusing on my singular task at hand. Kill the king. Drool falls from Edmund's mouth, pooling onto the table. All that authority and power, but at the end of the day, he is nothing more than a man. Grabbing his hair, I tilt his head back to expose his throat, bringing the sharp end of my dagger to his throat. I press. Acre's voice stops me.
Wait.
I don't move, only shifting my eyes to look at Acre through my lashes.
You owe me a life debt,
he says through clenched teeth. It takes me a moment, but I figure out what he means. Kai. He didn't kill Kai despite having every right to do so. Because I begged him not to. There's a commotion as Kenta soldiers flood the room, but I hold Acre's gaze. I came here with one goal in mind, but if I fulfill it, it might make me just as evil as the man I've always hated. I switch my attention to Beau. She's struggling to maintain her hold on Acre, teeth bared in concentration. As difficult as this has been for me, I can only imagine her plight, betraying her own flesh and blood. Where's the king's magic? Can you see it? She pants between breaths.
The right side of his chest, near his shoulder.
I don't think as I lift my arm and bring the dagger down in the identified area.
Again!
Beau yells. I do it again, but harder, shoving the blade into the hilt. And I feel it. The hum of magic dying against the dark blade, before going still inside the king's chest. A wail of pain escapes his mouth, rousing awake for a moment, head lulling to the side as he struggles to gain consciousness. It could possibly be a fatal wound if they don't get a healer to him fast enough. I dare a look at the three melee soldiers. No, four now Messer is within the fray, fighting off the onslaught of Kenta men. They continue to press in, and it's only a matter of time before they're overwhelmed. Stalking toward Beau, I hold out my hands. Give me the rope. She shakes her head.
He's going to kill us as soon as he's free.
He can't harm me, I remind her. She looks at her brother, the barbs buried so far into his skin that the metal is barely visible past the torn flesh and blood. But none of that stops him from struggling harder, creating more and more slack in the binds.
Go,
I tell her. Get Messer and get out. I'll meet you when I can. She's reluctant, but hands me the end of the rope, sparing her brother one last glance before descending the dais and into the madness. I don't bother maintaining the tension on the rope to keep Acre contained. The best thing I can do for my friends is to keep Acre as far away from them as possible, and there's not a doubt in my mind who he's going to come after first. Me. Like a monster unleashed from his cage, Acre stands with a wicked stillness. Blood spills to the ground, splattering across my skirt and bare feet. Although I know he can't hurt me, I'm terrified. I turn and run. I'm equally relieved and frightened by the sound of his shoes hitting the floor behind me. I escape through the side inlet the maidservants take from the kitchen. The hall is narrow as I turn the corner and take the staircase down 2 steps at a time. He's faster than I am, and his footfalls echo too close for my liking. Too close, too soon. I've just entered the kitchen when I'm swept off my feet. I scream. I can't help it. Fighting with all my might, I throw my elbow back, angling my body to shift loose in his hold. None of it works. He grabs me by the back of my hair and throws me into the wall, catching me by the throat before I can get my feet steady underneath me. His hand is slick against my jaw, but it doesn't help to dislodge the punishing grip of his fingers. Out of the corner of my eye, I see a panther appear at the top of the stairs. Messer releases a snarling yowl as he pounces forward. I lift my hand at my side, signaling him to refrain from attacking, and he skids to a stop before reaching the bottom step, paws slipping on the bloody stone floors. Acre can't hurt me. But no matter how many times I repeat it to myself, my heart pounds tenfold inside my chest. For the first time since he realized my intentions, Acre's true emotions peek through. Heartbreak and disappointment and disbelief shadow his features. World shattered as he looks into my eyes. Messer paces the stairwell, claws digging into each side of the wall as he turns, waiting. Acre, I murmur, desperate for him to see the sorrow mirrored inside of me. Then he kisses me. I open to him instantly, hungry to connect with him. The bond between us is smothered by the mangy stones around his neck, and it creates a hollow feeling where the tether resides. His kiss isn't anything but a painful goodbye, but I take what he's willing to offer me. I submit, letting him have his way as he devours me whole in one kiss. Then it's gone, and when I open my eyes to look at him, the hate has returned with a vengeance. He slaps me across the face, and I'm stunned. Covering my cheek with my hand, I look up at Acre as I right myself, and he's bracing his head in his hands, face contorted in pain. He grunts through clenched teeth as blood begins to drip from his nose. The oath is returning the favor.
Leave,
he orders, spittle flying from his mouth. Hallis appears at the opposite end of the hall, but he doesn't come any closer. I sidestep around Acre, the shock of his strike still hot on my skin. I keep my eyes on him, and Messer does the same as he slinks past with feline grace, lifting his upper lip and showing Acre his elongated teeth as he passes.
Go!
Acre shouts,
before I kill us both!
My chest feels as if it's caving in as my heart finishes cleaving in two. I leave him, and don't look back. An exclusive sneak peek of the next installment of the Fire and Metal series. Lightwielder. The five men at their fire have their backs to us. Unbeknownst to them, death is creeping up behind. The closer we get, the hotter the air becomes. The faster my heart beats, the calmer I feel. It's a strange high I've become accustomed to when walking into battle. My mind is empty except for a visceral need to kill and not be killed. A place and time where my thoughts cease, and I'm nothing more than a girl using her body for what it's been trained for. Whatever the end may be, the reprieve of death or the sweet pleasure of victory, I'm ready for either outcome. Shifting my sword in my hand, I dare a look at Friedrich. He's positioning himself to take the right flank as I move left. Our eyes lock, and he smiles. An impish grin I've never seen on his face before. Something more fitting for the likes of Messer.
Intruder!
The man to the far right of the small congregation points in my direction, drawing the attention of the others. His outcry dies on his lips as Friedrich swings his sword in a short arc, slicing through the side of the man's neck. He hasn't even hit the ground before Friedrich jabs his other blade through the throat of the next man in line, in one side and out the other, before yanking it free. The men are wholly unprepared for the ambush and scramble for their discarded weapons. Using their surprise to my advantage, I slice across the larger one's back. Non-fatal,
but painful as fuck, making him arch from the discomfort. It takes a flick of my wrist to sever the artery in his neck. Blood sent spewing across the ground. His scream turns into gargles as he drowns. The sound of hundreds of Strau warriors jolting from their sleep echoes from further in the cavern, but I keep my focus on the last man standing. He swings his sword toward my middle, and I leap back, waiting for his next move before advancing. Being smaller than most of my opponents, I'm often on the defense until there's an opening, and I've learned that even patience has a place in a fight to the death. His next move is predictable. A backswing aimed at my neck. I lift my blade to block it, but before the steel of his blade meets mine, it hits an invisible wall of resistance. The warrior's rage morphs into undiluted fear at the realization, and I can't stop the grin pulling at my lips. He's shaken, understanding that, knowing he's on the losing end of my sword. He begins to fall back, footsteps shuffling as he retreats backwards. The shield only protects me from harm, but it doesn't prevent my opponent from defending himself. I continue my assault. Front swing, back jab, again, again, and again. I fake a jab to my left, his right, turning my body at the last second and successfully disarm him. His sword skids across the cavern floor. In a last-ditch effort, he lunges for my throat, hands at the ready, only for his fingers to snap back from the force of meeting Friedrich's shield. He screams when I plunge my dagger into his gut and I hold his stare as I twist the blade. His shrieks turn into choked protests as he fumbles for my wrist with gnarled fingers. I acquiesce, releasing the weapon, blood gushing from the wound. It's too late to save himself, though. His eyes roll back, body tilting in the same direction before he finally loses consciousness, falling with a loud crack onto the fire. Darkness descends on the cavern, like the snuffing out of a candle. The commotion is extinguished along with the light. After a beat of silence, the Strau warriors' voices began to increase in volume again.
Fucking kill you!
Melee scum!
Another tally!
A vibration hums in the air, and it takes me a moment before realizing it's the force of the shield holding the onrushing warriors back. Something touches the side of my neck. I jolt.
It's me,
Friedrich says, voice somehow clear above the chaos. I let out a breath of relief, latching onto his arm, afraid to lose him. His grip is firm but gentle as he pulls me closer.
Not scared of the dark, are you, light wielder?
At the mention of my gift, I still. I'd all but forgotten the part of me that I've been constantly suppressing in the years since I left Kenta. That place inside me where my magic and bond reside together as one. I finger the stones at my neck. I never take them off. The air becomes nearly unbearable. Deafening. Violent. Friedrich makes the decision for me.
Show them how you burned down the dark forest.
Taking a deep breath, I unclasp the necklace, slowly sliding it from where it rests on my collarbones. I remind myself that Aker has never tried to breach the bond through the tether. Not once in all the years since I left Kenta. And if he wasn't wearing Manji stones himself, I'd likely already have been forced into his presence by now. I let the string of stones slip through my fingers and fall to the ground. The men rage beyond the invisible barrier, and I focus on the beating of my heart to drown them out. Pressing my palm against the spot under my sternum, I concentrate as I beckon my magic forward. Nothing happens. It takes so long that I question whether I've smothered my magic to death. Then I feel it. As if unfurling from a winter slumber, my gift stretches, slowly at first, but I feel it nonetheless. Like taking a shot of good whiskey, it burns, growing warmer as it spreads through my veins. I gasp as a dusting of light shines from the exposed skin of my hands. I'd forgotten what this feels like. Painful, but delicious, intoxicating, powerful. Then, in the blink of an eye, everything ceases to exist. The air stills. Silence descends so loudly that my ears ring. And I'm staring at a textbook laid open on a wooden desk, lit by a single candlestick. I struggle to make sense of what is happening when I see them. Male hands I've stared at for hours on end.
hands capable of amazing and terrifying things, with a silver scar that sits between the thumb and pointer finger. The right hand slides underneath the tissue-thin paper and lazily flips the page. In a panic, I attempt to squeeze my eyes shut, and just like my nightmares, the scene persists whether I want it to or not. He reaches for something out of sight. His hand returns with a grape pinched between two fingers. The scar glints in the flickering light as he rolls the fruit between his fingers while he reads. More like skims, as I can barely make out the words on the page before he's moving on to the next. Oh my gods. The grape comes closer before disappearing. Sweet sugar coats my tongue, the crunch of the skin echoing in my ears as he chews. This is not like the times after I accepted the bond, when my mind couldn't be in two places at once. No, the bond doesn't want to let me go. Bo's words ring in my head. Magic doesn't like being denied. I need the stones. Friedrich's voice sounds hollow when he yells, Joe! Aker's gaze snaps up. Pain lances across my face, and the last thing I see is a view of Aker's bedroom and the figure of a woman asleep in his bed.
This has been a Podium Audio production. If this audiobook fulfilled your fantasy, we would love for you to rate and review it. The audiobook might be over, but the heat isn't. Check us out at podiumentertainment.com and join our newsletter for your next love story. Also, don't forget to stalk us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. We hate to watch you go, but love to watch you leave. Until next time. You have been listening to Metalslinger, Book 1 of Fire and Metal. Produced by Mitch Rains. Written by Rachel Schneider. Performed by Andy Eloise. Text copyright 2024 by Rachel Schneider. Production copyright 2025 by Podium Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.